Welcome to your AQA A-Level Psychology Revision Podcast. I'm your tutor today, and we're diving deep into one of the most fascinating, controversial, and heavily examined topics in the entire specification, the psychodynamic approach. Whether you're revising for the first time or doing a final polish before your exam, stick with me. By the end of this episode, you'll have everything you need to smash those marks. Let's start with a quick overview. The psychodynamic approach was developed by Sigmund Freud in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Freud was a Viennese neurologist who became convinced that the key to understanding human behavior lay not in what people consciously think or feel, but in the hidden depths of the unconscious mind. His ideas were radical, controversial, and they changed psychology forever. AQA examiners love this topic because it demands both detailed description, that's your AO1 marks, and sophisticated evaluation, your AO3 marks, which carry a whopping 40% of the total weighting. So let's get into it. The first core concept you absolutely must know is the structure of the mind. Freud proposed that the mind operates on three levels. First, the conscious mind. This is everything you're currently aware of. Second, the preconscious. This contains memories and thoughts that aren't in your immediate awareness, but can be brought to consciousness with effort. And third, and most importantly for Freud, the unconscious mind. This is the vast, hidden reservoir of thoughts, desires, fears, and memories that we are completely unaware of, but which Freud believed drives most of our behavior. Think of it like an iceberg. The tiny tip above water is the conscious mind, but the enormous mass below the surface is the unconscious. This is where the real action happens. Now, layered on top of this topographical model of the mind is Freud's structural model, the tripartite personality. This is made up of three components: the id, the ego, and the superego. The id is present from birth. It operates entirely in the unconscious and is driven by the pleasure principle. It wants immediate gratification of all instinctual drives. Freud identified two key drives within the id: eros, the life instinct, which includes sexual and survival drives, and thanatos, the death instinct, which includes aggression. The id is entirely selfish, irrational, and demands satisfaction right now. Think of a newborn baby. It doesn't care that it's 3 a.m. It wants feeding and it wants it immediately. That's pure AD. The ego develops during the first 2 to 3 years of life. It operates primarily in the conscious and preconscious, and it works according to the reality principle. The ego's job is to mediate between the unrealistic demands of the id and the moral constraints of the superego, while also taking into account the real world. It's the rational, executive part of the personality. Crucially, the ego uses defense mechanisms to manage the anxiety that arises from conflicts between the id and superego. The superego develops around the age of 5, following the resolution of the Oedipus or Electra complex. More on those in a moment. The superego operates according to the morality principle. It contains our internalized sense of right and wrong derived from our parents and wider society. The superego has two components: the conscience, which punishes us with guilt when we do something wrong, and the ego ideal, which rewards us with pride when we live up to our moral standards. So the personality is in constant dynamic conflict. The id wants pleasure, the superego demands moral perfection, and the poor ego has to find a workable compromise. This is why Freud called his theory psychodynamic. It's all about the dynamic interplay of these forces. Now let's talk about defense mechanisms, because AQA examiners love asking about these, and candidates frequently lose marks by confusing them or giving vague definitions. Defense mechanisms are unconscious strategies used by the ego to protect itself from the anxiety caused by id-superego conflict. They distort reality in some way. The most important one is repression. This is the unconscious forcing of distressing thoughts, memories, or desires out of conscious awareness and into the unconscious. Notice the word unconscious. This is what distinguishes repression from suppression, which is the conscious, deliberate effort to push thoughts away. This is one of the most common mistakes candidates make in exams. Repression is unconscious. Suppression is conscious. Learn that distinction and never mix them up. The second key defense mechanism is denial. This involves refusing to acknowledge an anxiety-provoking reality. For example, a person who has just received a terminal diagnosis might simply refuse to believe it is true. The third is displacement. This involves redirecting an emotion, usually anger, from its original threatening target onto a safer substitute. The classic example: you have a terrible day at work and your boss shouts at you, but you can't shout back because you'd lose your job. So instead, you come home and snap at your family. You've displaced your anger from your boss onto a safer target. Other defense mechanisms worth knowing include projection, attributing your own unacceptable feelings to someone else, regression, reverting to behavior characteristic of an earlier developmental stage under stress, and sublimation, channeling unacceptable impulses into socially acceptable activities, like channeling aggression into competitive sport. Now let's move on to the psychosexual stages of development. Freud proposed that personality develops through 5 stages, each centered on a different erogenous zone. If a child experiences too much or too little gratification at any stage, they become fixated, meaning psychic energy or libido remains stuck at that stage, leading to characteristic adult personality traits. Stage 1 is the oral stage, from birth to around 18 months. The erogenous zone is the mouth, and pleasure comes from feeding and sucking. Fixation here, caused by either overindulgence or frustration, leads to adult traits such as dependency, passivity, or conversely, aggression and sarcasm, what Freud called oral aggressive traits. Stage 2 is the anal stage, from around 18 months to 3 years. The focus shifts to the anus and the control of bowel movements. Fixation here leads to 2 contrasting adult personality types: the anal retentive personality, obsessively tidy, controlling, and stubborn, or the anal expulsive personality, messy, disorganized, and reckless. Stage 3 is the phallic stage, from around 3 to 6 years, and this is the most complex and controversial. The erogenous zone is the genitals. During this stage, children develop unconscious sexual feelings for the opposite sex parent and rivalry with the same sex parent. In boys, this is the Oedipus complex, named after the Greek myth of Oedipus, who unknowingly killed his father and married his mother. The boy desires his mother and fears his father will punish him by castrating him. This is castration anxiety. To resolve this anxiety, the boy represses his desire for his mother and identifies with his father, internalizing his father's values and forming the superego. In girls, the equivalent is the Elektra complex, a term actually coined by Carl Jung, though Freud discussed the concept. Girls experience penis envy upon discovering they lack a penis, and they blame their mother. They then develop a weaker identification with their mother. Freud controversially argued this leads to a less fully developed superego in women, a claim that has attracted significant criticism for its androcentrism. Stage 4 is the latency stage, from around 6 to 12 years. Sexual impulses are repressed, and children focus on developing social and intellectual skills. There is no new erogenous zone here. Stage 5 is the genital stage, from puberty onwards. Sexual interest reemerges, this time directed towards peers of the opposite sex. Successful navigation of all previous stages leads to a mature, well-adjusted adult personality. Now, a key piece of supporting evidence for the Oedipus complex is the case study of little Hans, published by Freud in 1909. Hans was a 5-year-old boy who developed a phobia of horses. Freud interpreted this as a displacement of Hans's castration anxiety. Hans was afraid of his father, and this fear was displaced onto horses. The case was seen as supporting evidence for the Oedipus complex. However, and this is crucial for your AO3 evaluation, the case study was not conducted by Freud himself. The data was collected and reported by Hans's father, who was a follower of Freud. This introduces significant researcher bias and the risk of subjective interpretation. The father may have unconsciously interpreted Hans's behavior in ways that confirmed Freud's theory. This is a methodological weakness you should use in evaluation. Right, let's move into exam tips and common mistakes. This is where you can really gain or lose marks. First, the AO1 versus AO3 balance. Remember that AO3, evaluation and analysis, carries 40% of the marks. This means you cannot afford to spend all your time describing the theory. For every descriptive point you make, you need to follow it with a critical analysis. Use the Peel structure. Point, state your evaluative point clearly. Evidence, provide specific evidence, such as a study, a researcher's name, or a specific critique. Explain why this matters, what it tells us about the validity or usefulness of the approach. Link back to the question. Second, be specific in your evaluation. Generic comments like Freud's theory is old or it was developed a long time ago will earn you 0 marks. Examiners want specific critiques. For example, the psychodynamic approach lacks scientific credibility because its core concepts, such as the unconscious and the ID, are unfalsifiable. They cannot be tested or disproved through empirical research. Karl Popper argued that for a theory to be scientific, it must be falsifiable. Because Freud's concepts are not directly observable or measurable, the approach fails this criterion, which undermines its status as a scientific theory. Third, the unfalsifiability critique is your most powerful AO3 weapon. Use it. But don't stop there. Also discuss the androcentrism of the theory, particularly in relation to the Electra complex and the concept of penis envy. Feminist psychologists such as Karen Horney challenged Freud's male-centric framework, arguing that his theories reflected the patriarchal society of Victorian Vienna rather than universal psychological truths. Fourth, do not confuse repression and suppression. I said it before and I'll say it again because it costs candidates marks every single year. Repression is unconscious. Suppression is conscious. Fifth, when discussing the psychosexual stages, always link fixation to specific adult personality traits. Don't just describe the stage, explain what happens when a child gets stuck there. Examiners credit the fixation to adult behavior link. Sixth, in application questions, AO2, always quote directly from the scenario. If the question gives you a scenario about someone who is obsessively tidy and controlling, quote those specific details and explicitly link them to anal retentive fixation at the anal stage. Don't be vague. Now let's do a quick fire recall quiz. I'll ask the question, pause the podcast, think of your answer, then I'll give you the key points. Question one, what are the three components of Freud's tripartite personality and what principle does each operate on? The id operates on the pleasure principle. The ego operates on the reality principle. The superego operates on the morality principle. Question two, what is the difference between repression and suppression? Repression is the unconscious pushing of distressing material out of conscious awareness. Suppression is the conscious, deliberate effort to avoid thinking about something. Question three, name three defense mechanisms and give a brief definition of each. Repression, unconscious blocking of distressing thoughts. Displacement, redirecting emotion from the original target to a safer substitute. Denial, refusing to acknowledge an anxiety-provoking reality. Question four, what is the Oedipus complex and what is the key piece of supporting evidence? The Oedipus complex is the unconscious desire of a young boy for his mother and rivalry with his father, driven by castration anxiety. The key supporting evidence is the case study of Little Hans, 1909. Question five, give two specific criticisms of the psychodynamic approach that would earn AO3 marks. First, unfalsifiability. The concepts cannot be empirically tested, violating Popper's criterion of falsifiability. Second, androcentrism. The theory is male-centered, particularly in its treatment of female development through the Electra complex and penis envy, which feminist psychologists such as Karen Horney have challenged. Excellent work. Let's wrap up with a quick summary. The psychodynamic approach, developed by Sigmund Freud, proposes that behavior is driven by unconscious forces. The mind has three levels, conscious, preconscious, and unconscious, and the personality is structured as the id, ego, and superego, each operating on different principles. The ego manages conflict between the id and superego using defense mechanisms, the most important of which is repression. Personality develops through five psychosexual stages, oral, anal, phallic, latency, and genital, and fixation at any stage shapes adult personality. The approach has been hugely influential, giving rise to psychoanalytic therapy, but it faces serious criticisms including unfalsifiability, androcentrism, over-reliance on case study methodology, and cultural bias. For your exam, nail the AO1 descriptions with precise terminology. Build your AO3 with specific, named critiques. Use PEL, quote the scenario in application questions. And remember, repression is unconscious, suppression is conscious. Good luck in your exam. You've got this. See you in the next episode.